Thank you. Thank you very much and welcome. I'm Father Mitch Pacwell. Welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Our guest tonight is the director of the Institute for Advanced Physics and a world-class Thomist. He gained worldwide recognition in theoretical physics by solving an 80-year-old problem in Einstein's theories. And he was a senior scientist of Caltech's laser interferometer, gravitational wave observatory. The acronym is LIGO or LIGO. This project won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2017. He's the author of 11 books, which explain important new physics that changed the way we think about everything, including history, which he has also studied deeply. He has appeared in various shows and series on this network for the past 23 years. So please welcome Dr. Anthony Rizzi. Welcome. Good to have you.
Good to be here.
23 years.
23 years. It's a long
time. You're starting to get old.
Yeah, it's happened.
Well, I should talk. Yeah. So, this is good. And what is it that you're looking to explain today? What's your goal today?
This is. I was asked to write an article.
Yes.
For the 800th birthday of St. Thomas Aquinas, which was last year. The yes. article was just published in December, so it's the first chance we get to talk about it. But it was his 800th birthday, and it kind of went by kind of a little bit softly, and I'm trying to make it a little bit more bang and bring to the fore what St. Thomas has both as a person and his thought, because both of those things are important for us to model after him in his behavior and his love of truth and his actual discoveries and thought that he made that changed the world. And if I could summarize what we want to talk about today in one sentence, I would say what St. Thomas says, which I would like everybody to really take seriously: the greatest kindness you can do to any man is lead him from error to truth. And that's kind of the opposite of the way we think today. It's like, oh, you're going to accuse me of error? That's going to be fighting words, right? And that's exactly the opposite. We want to look for truth, and we want people who help us in truth to do that, to really challenge us to grow in truth, and that is what we're made here to do. Actually,
I think there's also an attitude among a lot of people that, well, you say it's an error, but I have a right to my truth,
right.
And you have a right to your truth.
Yes.
And so you should just leave me alone,
yeah.
Which is
no.
quite commonly a dodge
yes.
of really addressing the issues.
Right. To really dig down and one of the things that St. Thomas did that's so important is he always engaged intellectually is whoever he was talking with. He took seriously everything they said. He never dismissed what people said and said, that's
right.
nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's largely what's missing today is we don't engage each other intellectually. I find that especially among young people, that there's a kind of emptiness out there. There's, you know, every problem imaginable out there. People are confused. They have broken families. They have no attachments. People are not attaching, you know. I've heard it multiple times that depression and alienation is more than it's ever been. And the solution really isn't to simply be nice to people. The solution is to engage them intellectually. We have a young woman that contacted the Institute worried about the world not existing. That she said she went every place that she could. She found the Institute. And she was concerned because everyone around her didn't care about that reality. And she came, and I find that is a very common, especially among young people. They have all these problems, there's moral issues and so forth, but nobody's addressing their questions. Nobody's addressing people intellectually. We've lost the art of speaking to each other and hearing what we're saying, taking the meaning and responding to the meaning and listening to what people are saying. As St. Thomas did, you know as well as I do, he'd have the format. He'd say the argument, but he'd say the argument better than the person. That's true interface with your fellow man. That's true friendship where you understand what he's saying and you accept what's true in it and then you advance it. And if there's an error in it, you kindly, but deliberately purge the air, knock out the air.
It's a wonderful format. A lot of people would be surprised, but St. Thomas would have a question. Mm-hmm. He would give all the objections he possibly could find to the Christian position.
Yeah.
And he never treated them as straw arguments.
Right.
He would take them seriously and take and answer. So it's the question, the objections, and then an answer to each objection.
And each one of those represented... The thing I want to get us back to, each one of those represented a person that was saying that thing. And he treated that as a person that needed to be answered, not as a person to be dismissed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're missing. We're missing contacting the person. We don't know what that means. We think it means being extra nice to them and not saying anything that riles them. But when you get told you're in error, I'm sorry, that's going to rile you some. I mean, what did they do to the man when he... And he come and exposed everybody's error, right? What did they do to them? They crucified him. Yeah. And that was already seen, and Plato already knew that, right? Plato said, what would they do to the just man who came and told nothing but the truth? Basically, Plato said he would be crucified. And so we have to expect that people aren't going to like when you tell them stuff that they don't know. But we want to do it in a way that they can receive. And the way we do that is by answering really what their concern is, not bypassing their concern with a dismissive attitude, but really addressing whatever the issue is. And St. Thomas was a master of that. And I think but I really want to get to the deepest thing of how do we get to truth? How do we get to truth? We get to truth by starting with what we get through the senses. And you might ask, why am I here as a physicist, right? Well, as a physicist, physics is the first science, and we've talked about it before, but it needs to be repeated that everything we know comes through what we know through the senses. So physics, the study of that, is the first science that everything else proceeds on, and we've lost track of that. And I think that people have to be made to think about that part, because we're not invested in that. And in fact, this is why St. Thomas has such a mark in the church. He has such a mark in the church because the first time in human history that physics was put scientifically at the base of all thinking was done by St. Thomas Aquinas. Mm-hmm. And that's why, that at the Council of Trent, there was the Bible and there was the Summa.
The Summa
Theologica of St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, that was
the Summa of all his work.
Yes.
And so that's the value that the church put on that. And it was through St. Thomas that they were able to address all the errors that were of the day in a clear way and put a beautiful deepening, not a changing, but a deepening of the understanding of everything that the church had already taught. And that's what Thomas finally did, is everything that was said, he found a deeper understanding of it that unified what the fathers had said and unified it based on the ground physics that he learned from Aristotle, but he saw with True himself. And that base physics is what made him unique, because you can only put the physics in place first. And that's what makes St. Thomas unique. We're not going to have another St. Thomas, because you can only do that once. Not in a linear progression forward, you can only have one time where you put the base of your thinking. And that's a principled thing that I think that once we see, it changes the way we understand understanding. Mm-hmm. I think that we are now not, because we don't start with what we see, and this is what happened in the Middle Ages, actually. I point out in the article that there was an anti-nature attitude, that nature, we don't like that stuff, that evil matter stuff. I'm a spiritual guy, right? And we don't need that. And the church fought heavily against it, and Thomas Aquinas was the chief hammer of that, fighting that error and addressing the Manichaeanism, the nature is evil attitude that was just prevalent. And I like to say that St. Thomas was the truth as truth. He saw the truth and he corrected it. And St. Francis was the truth as lived. St. Francis brought people back to nature and say, this is the way you live it. That nature is good and nature is a vehicle through which you get to God.
This tension between trying to be spiritual and ignore the reality of the physical world
yeah.
and having a physical body is a struggle that goes back to many of the ancient Greek philosophers. Right. And especially when you get watered down versions of their philosophy, it gets even worse.
Right, right.
Just, you know, when you water down a poor starting point, then it just makes worse ideas. And the idea that you could be super spiritual and get rid of the physical was key to Gnosticism. Which boggles my mind to see how many people have become interested in Gnosticism that believed that the spirit was all that mattered and an evil God created the physical world. And this is being revived.
It's mind-boggling.
Odd.
It's so really odd. But, you know, so there's a couple things I want to say there. One is I want to talk about what it means to have a body. But also I want to talk about the fact that that we need, we can't just go back and read St. Thomas. So that's a big point that I make in the article that I hope people will read that have the time. But the point is that you have to go via modern science, because modern science has taken the science of the Middle Ages and advanced it way beyond what it was before. And you can't, as a modern, even if you haven't taken any science, as a modern, you can't just go back here. You are being fed culturally by modern science. So unless you understand modern science, and that takes a modern scientist to do it, and that's what the Institute for Advanced Physics is doing, is explaining what the equations that we do in modern physics mean. So, you know, I think that Jason has a thing he can put up of an equation that is the Einstein equations that describes our gravity in our universe. And it's a bunch of equations. And when he puts it up, I can talk about it. But there's also an equation, there it is. So that's what we, when we, physicists talk about the universe, that's what we mean. That's what we mean. Everyone knew that, right? So but that's what we mean. So when we talk about Big Bang and all that stuff, that's what we're trying to say. But we don't know how to say it, so we say this kind of mythology. And what you hear from the popularizers especially is not real physics, because this is the way we think, and we're not able to translate it. And what the Institute for Advanced Physics alone is doing is telling us what this means so that we can understand the physical world properly at the level of specification, at the level that we're meant to understand it as 21st century people, not 13th century people, so we can live in the modern world as people that access that information properly instead of improperly. And the result of this is that, I want to come back to the body, but the result of this is, I believe that that because of this, we're living kind of like an animal level, where we're not really understanding, we're parroting things, and this is universal. I think we all are doing this because the physics that you have of your culture is all you get. And this is what you get, those equations. And that's what you're getting, and you don't understand it, so you can't really address these things. So we're living kind of at an animal level. You see this, parrot this, you parrot it back, you do this, you parrot it back. And it reminds me of Helen Keller, you know, the story of Helen Keller. If you haven't seen the movie, The Miracle Worker of 1962, I recommend it. But in that
movie,
it's a really wonderful movie. In that movie, Helen, who's a little girl, is blind and deaf, and she has no access. And she walks around and doesn't, her mind is not activated. Of course, she has a mind, she's human. But she's not able to understand things. Everything is a fog. And the teacher comes in, and everyone's shocked because the teacher says, no, don't do that, do this. And she's trying to train her to focus her mind to think. And they don't appreciate it. You're being mean to her. Look what you're doing. You stop that. And she is, and I feel like that's the state we're in. Everybody just says, it's fine. And so Helen becomes more and more disorderly and angst-filled, which is what our young people are. They're angst-filled. And everybody's angst-filled because we don't have answers to meaningful questions. And she runs around, and they get increasingly mad at her trying to put boundaries on her.
At Ms. Sullivan, the teacher.
Ms. Sullivan, the teacher. That's right. There's Ms. Sullivan, the teacher, and there's Helen. And they get increasingly mad at Ms. Sullivan for putting bounds on her and trying to teach her the alphabet. By teaching her the alphabet, she starts teaching her in introducing her to meaning. But at first, it isn't meaning. At first, it's just simple parrot. Do this, do that. And she gradually learns how to be polite, not to go pick people's food out and throw it across the room, and not to jump up and down. And the family's happy. And that's kind of where we are. We got the people acting kind of, we don't do that so well, but that's kind of where our culture is today. Everyone's okay. You're not, stop saying stuff to them, stop engaging them, let them sort of, you know, keep doing it. And she pushes past that. And she says, give me 2 weeks with the child, because I need to help that child see. And they all get really mad at her. And then you remember in the movie, which in reality, what happened to her is at some point, she comes to the realization, her mind switches on, and she comes to understand water. Yes. She sees the meaning of water. Before she saw how to, okay, if I make this symbol, somebody will give me water. But when she sees the meaning of water, she runs around and she sees the meaning of everything. And that's the way I would like people to see our situation. We don't see the meaning of anything now. People just don't, because they're dealing with a physics that is like that, and not something they can understand, and they're happy with parroting, kind of parroting Catholicism, kind of like Jesus warned us about. And they don't want people to say, wait a second, let's put some boundaries here, and let's start paying attention, and let's start thinking about what really has to be done. And when she did that, you know, you could just see Helen's face when she, and this is what happened to the Institute for Advanced Physics. When someone actually sees it, they say, wow, I didn't know I could think. Because literally, we've been deprived of the ability to think. The young people especially. And then when they go out, I had one young woman tell me, I didn't realize there was fake Catholics and fake physics. Because she had only seen, when she finally saw it, she hadn't seen how the rest of the world operates, which is not by actually thinking about things, but by, you know, do this, see that, parroting, and what kind of what Helen was doing. So I like that analogy for calling us, that we have to be putting, you know, like Chesterton said, the church is a place where you have these boundaries so everybody can play, so you don't fall off the mountain.
Right.
And if without the boundaries, you fall off the mountain because you don't know which direction to go. And we've really lost that intellectual. We have to get back to knowing that we are intellectual creatures. We have to spend time in contemplation and study and finding people that can help us. We need to find our Miss Sullivans. We are made to find the hierarchical structure and ask people that know. Don't ask your neighbor or your friends or somebody you like. Ask somebody who actually knows. And the less you like the answer, the more likely they're giving you the truth, because we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And it was the last resort that they went to Miss Sullivan, because they went to all these other people who were giving them simple answers. When she finally came, it was the real answer, and they resisted it because it was against their natural instincts. And that's the sign you're growing, is when you have, you know, an error that somebody points out to you and you may not like it. And then, again, this is what the whole gospel message is about. What happens to truth when he reveals himself? We kill him. We don't want that level of understanding. And then once we accept it, it's eye-opening. We see the world for the first time like Helen did. She saw water, and that's such a profound thing. She saw the meaning of water for the first time in her life, and that lit up all the other meaning, and she could talk again.
Yeah. I think when we consider this, we can remember how folks in our culture are sometimes complaining that, well, these politicians are getting away with this kind of crime and that kind of crime. But, you know, people allow that to happen because they don't know any better themselves.
Right, yeah.
They can't see that, the kind of violence that people are perpetrating. Yeah. We just had another near school shooting that was stopped, but, you know, we have so many folks that think they can go ahead and bomb this man's house, shoot up this school principal and the students. Mm-hmm. We can mess around with other people's wives and all these things. If I get away with it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It takes folks who understand why, you know, chastity has an inherent goodness.
Right, yeah.
Before that, somebody can say, oh, It's not what I should do. Yeah. The right to personal property has an inherent goodness.
Right.
Respect for somebody else's life has an inherent goodness.
Right. But even the idea that we are made for truth and we have to work with each other to grow in truth, that we have to find our proper place and have the kind of discussions where we can grow in truth, is not understood. People do not understand that that's what they're supposed to do, and find out things they don't, clarify things that they know, and find out what they don't know, and find out what's wrong with what they know, what they think they know. Mm-hmm. And that intellectual focus is really the focus of Catholicism, that the reason he came was to testify to the truth, and those who hear the truth hears him. And that goes back to the thing I said at the beginning. We're really after giving people the truth. We want to give them the truth. We want to be part of the common good of growing in truth together. And to do that, we have to be awake, like Helen got awake, to principle, to thought, that we have to understand things, not just a list of rules to do, but to understand, what is it to be a man? What is it to be a physical thing? What is it to be an animal? What is a plant? How in those things do I see God? And those answers are not available today. And to drive this home, I really want, because I don't want to make it sound like this is just some theoretical problem. This is the problem that's been destroying our culture for 400 years, because the scientific revolution introduced this equational method, which is wonderful and needed. In fact, we could not advance in understanding without it, but it hasn't been digested properly. We don't actually, as physicists, and therefore the rest of the world, doesn't understand what our physics is in any way that can be addressed in terms of meaning. And so we have to spend the time to go study those things, take the time to learn, you know, and sometimes some people in certain states can only support those that are doing it, because they're sick in bed or whatever, and they're invalids or they're in suffering, and then they can offer their suffering up, because that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to advance the body of Christ in truth, because he who hears the truth, and it's every truth, and the littlest beginning truths are what lead to the higher truths. And we're so used to jumping to the higher truths that we forget about the starting point. You know, if you want common ground, here it is. It's dirt. That's the common ground. I can just say, you know, you and I both like the Rangers. That's not true common ground. That's a starting point that doesn't really matter that much. We have to start with what we see. And that's the true common ground. And when you do that, you can have conversations with anybody. But until you do that, you're starting in the air wherever you want. And you're not really listening to what people are saying. And therefore, you're not doing what St. Thomas did and answering. So just to give you an example, you know the philosopher Bernard Lonergan.
Yes.
He is a complete philosophical idealist, which means he adopts the scientism as a method. It's called the generalized empirical method. And he's a non-scientist trying to tell us how the science applies to the rest of the world. And this is typically what happens, and it destroys the humanities. Humanities are almost completely decimated. Theology is almost completely decimated by not starting from the physics like St. Thomas did. And I'm sure St. Thomas is praying up a storm that people will hear this message. We've got to get the physics back and the understanding of the physics back, because if we don't, we'll have people like Bernard Lonergan, who now is very popular. There's at least three major Catholic figures that use him as his base, as their base. And they're distorting people's understanding of things because they're using him as a starting point, because they picked it, because it's a good way to get people to pay attention.
So the issue would be to start off with solid physics.
Yes.
Where would people go to begin to learn that initial ground, that basic physics?
And that's what we need to do, and that's what we need to encourage people to do, and especially young people, because young people eat this up. They're hungry for meaning. They're not satisfied yet. They have not eaten the junk food long enough. They still are hungry, but anybody can learn it or work with somebody who can help them learn. The starting place for most people is the Kids' Introduction to Physics, which is just, you know, a sixth grader can read it. And then this is number two for more advanced people who want to learn something about all the way up to quantum mechanics, very simple physics. For physicists and people that are studying engineering and stuff, we have textbooks that can be used in high school and in college. This is just the mechanics book, but we have a series of these to teach people how to understand the equations, really know what they mean. So I want to.
So let's start off with the kids' book for physics.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what is it that you would start off teaching there?
So, by the way, I should add, and to fully answer your question, there's a science before science and a bunch of articles on our website, IEPweb.org, that uses the physics to explain all kinds of things, everything from friendship to the death penalty, mm-hmm. to how to build up a principled view of those things to really prove your position rather than just asserting it from a starting point like Lonergan does. Because mm-hmm. you can start a starting point, and then if you just pick one out of the air, I just say, okay, well, I don't like your starting point. I'll make up my own. And that's the modern world. Everybody gets to pick his starting point and then argue whatever you want. Nobody can prove you wrong because you're starting wherever you want.
Yeah.
And all I have to do is say, well, I don't want to start there. Okay?
Right.
And then we're done.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, the kids' book basically starts very simply with the things you see and explains to you how to look and then walks you through what you see. And so one of the things I like to use, I don't have anything to throw to you, but I could throw
the book.
I can throw you the book.
Yeah.
So the question I ask people, you know, is okay, what caused that motion? And you know what and I asked somebody right before I came, just so I could give a particular example. I asked him, what causes that? And he really had no idea. He had no idea. You know what he said? He said, that's not my area of expertise. So looking at stuff that you see like a baby would is not our area of expertise. We're so programmed against looking at the world and seeing, we don't ask simple questions like what causes motion. And St. Thomas realized that's the core question.
Yes.
If you get that right, then you can prove the existence of God and you can consider everything. And if you get that wrong, then everything else is wrong. And that's what and Aristotle basically did that a long time ago. But the problem is that people aren't even right or wrong. They don't care. They don't care to. And that's what the book tells you. It tells you how to look at how to look and see and focus and contemplate on what you actually see and see what you see and explain to you what you see and what modern physics has revealed to us through its equational method that we could not have seen before, that Aristotle or St. Thomas did not see.
In just a few seconds, what did you tell this guy caused that?
So I had to explain to him about impetus, because what happens is, what the next thing that people will say is, you did it. Well, and then I have to say, well, I'm not touching it anymore, and it still keeps going. What keeps it going? And what happens is that by throwing it, you're causing a new power to be activated in the thing, and this is coming out of modern physics, looking at the equations, a new power called impetus that moves the thing at a straight line at a constant speed, unless something else changes that impetus, either increases it or decreases it by acting on it. Mm-hmm. So that is something that comes right out of modern physics that nobody's ever looked at, that we've bypassed, that bypasses the starting point of thinking, and that kind of change is really at the heart of what St. Thomas understood and how he, and so the book actually takes you to prove the existence of God by the end and shows you that it's a radical irrationality to not accept the existence of the unchangeable changer. And you do have a Helen Keller experience when you put your mind to it. But that's the real alarm bell I want to sound, is that we have to start thinking. We have to stop talking and start studying and find people that can teach us and let them be receptive to that teaching and let them learn. And that's what St. Thomas did, and it's what people did with St. Thomas. You know, the popes all asked St. Thomas, what do you think? In his own day, they recognize he's the guy that knows stuff, and people came and asked him.
Right.
We don't do that anymore. We think that our neighbor is just as good as, you know, for real stuff, for our mechanics and other things. We'll go to the experts, right? We'll go to the mechanic. But if it has to do with our life, we'll ask Fred or our local parish priest. There's no reason to expect. In fact, every reason to expect they don't know. But we ask them because we get an answer we like instead of the truth. And if I could tell people one thing, is to look for an authority that you can trust and learn from him and sit at his feet and grow and understand and find your place in the hierarchy of knowledge so that you can contribute to it, both to people around you and below you and above you, and that every can be part of a community of a whole where we all have our own indispensable place, because each one of us has an indispensable place, but we've stopped looking for that place.
Yeah.
We're just walking around like Helen was without that understanding of the world.
Okay. We have to take a break,
okay.
Because that's another principle, time and its limitations. But if you want to learn more about Dr. Rizzi's work, you can go to the website, of the Institute for Advanced Physics. It's iapweb.org, iapweb.org, and find out some of these basics of physics and reality upon which we can build the rest of our understanding. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, get some of your questions and comments, so please stay with us. All right, welcome back. First, I want to encourage you to get Dr. Rizzi's book. It's The Science Before Science, A Guide to Thinking in the 21st Century. And that's item number 5046. You also have his EWTN TV series DVD, called The Science Before Science, A Guide to Thinking and Believing. And that is item number HDSBS. HDSBS. Both of these are available at EWTNRC.com, and they'll be helpful to, you know, understanding, you know, some of these basic starting points and building on solid physics from which you can begin to understand the rest of physical reality and the rest of reality. We have some questions.
Yeah.
We'll start off with this lady. Ma'am, where are you from?
From Peachtree City, Georgia.
Good to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And just down the road from us. And so what can we do for you today?
Well, I've been wondering, listening to Dr. Anthony, with the current state of affairs that we have in our country right now with protests and anger and people lashing out and our reaction of trying not to react violently to that, mm-hmm. how do we change that mindset that they may be of the mindset they're doing the correct things, but they're also being persuaded by others mm-hmm. to cause these protests and react violently. How do we deal with that without becoming violent ourselves?
Mm. And just so I can clarify something, you're not objecting to people protesting.
Right.
But it's the fact that there's no dialogue, it becomes violent, cancellation culture was part of this,
right.
Where you know you have to be silent, only I can talk. That's more what you're talking about, not just the fact of protesting, but the disrespect and inability to communicate.
Correct. Protesting is part of our culture to begin with, and it's illegal. We have the freedom of speech.
Right.
But we're watching people get extremely violent,
right.
And
right.
They're burning down businesses. We've seen it on TV, on the news, and
sure.
These sort of things. And I'm finding it difficult to deal with personally, you know, mentally, and trying to, other than praying and asking for world peace and peace in our country.
Sure.
How
okay.
do we cope with this?
Great.
I really like that question because it kind of gets to the everyday issues that we deal with. And I think that's part of the angst in our culture, the loss
yes.
of feeling that there is understanding that you might be shot at any moment, that there's not like a civil discourse anymore. And I think that, you know, the way I would address that first is to see, you know, that as an outgrowth of the lack of understanding, more general lack of understanding, and try to empathize with those people as just not understanding, rather than people that are trying to hurt us, and try to pray for, it's very targeted so that the intellectual life of all of us can get focused on truth and not on dominating the other person, but on all together seeking the truth and being open to whenever, by argument, what the errors are, and not run away from the argument, but run towards it as seeking truth with the openness to whatever that truth might be, and that will help you feel less helpless. You won't feel like you can't do anything, because by doing that, by recognizing that, you're already recognizing there's an issue, and then by taking on yourself to go study yourself and say, what part am I playing in this? How much do I really understand? And use that as a motivation to go study. Start a study group with somebody, read the material, talk about the material, read some of the articles that you're most interested in, and learn from those articles things that you can digest and pass along and get other people, especially your kids or grandkids, they might be able to read them and help you. Because we often find that the younger people can digest this stuff a lot faster. And by doing that, you're helping. Because we each have a place, and a lot of times we discourage that kind of intellectual growth. Just to show you how serious this problem is, this is not uncommon, so I don't want to just target one person, but I know a particular parish priest at a university who one of the first sermons he gave was, I used to be in college, I hated college, so I can understand how you guys all hate it. And the students didn't hate it. I can understand, so don't sweat it if you don't do bad on your exam. A student came to him and said, you know, I cheated on this exam, I did this, and the cheating thing is horrendous because the intellectual care for truth itself is lost. And he said, it's okay to cheat, you were justified. And then another time, this is multiple things he did in a row. Another student came to him after he was told the truth. The student said this to one of our members, one of the people involved in studying this material. He said, why aren't you studying this anymore? You know what he said? He said, truth is not necessary for salvation. And they said, that doesn't make any sense. And he ran to the priest, and the priest said, don't worry about it. If it makes you feel bad, drop it. So whatever you can do to push back against your children or yourself when you do that, you're fighting this what Pope Benedict called the dictatorship of relativism, and it can keep you from feeling helpless. And you can ask specifically, you know, Mother Angelica always used to say, you have to ask for specific prayers, and I think that's true. God is in the spirit. So if you ask for that specific prayer, pray that we get the intellectual life back and we stop making fun of it. This is a parish priest at a university telling these students not to worry about truth.
It's
horrible, but I'm telling you, this is not unusual. This is the par for the course. You don't get grounded people telling people arguments. And most people are satisfied with just, you know, painting over the problem. Yeah. And that's what generates violence. If you're not heard, if people don't feel like you're answering them, then they get mad. And we are not, if we're honest with ourselves, we're not answering people's real questions. We're leaving them without answers.
I thinking of this question that this lady asked, you know, during those protests, at one point there were people saying, from the river to the sea, the Palestine will be free.
Yeah.
And what was very telling was to ask the protesters, which river and which sea are you talking about? This is what you're talking about in terms of having the physical reality.
Yeah, understanding what you're talking about, right?
And that you know what. And then when you say from the river to the sea, who's there now?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do with them?
Yeah. They haven't thought about it, right?
They have no clue.
They have no clue what they're saying. Yeah.
And yet there's great anger.
Yeah.
Over you know, the situation, violence is done in the name of that by people who don't know which river, which sea, and what is at stake for about 7 million people living there.
And this
is key.
And this is really important because people do not realize that what you get angry with reveals your treasure. Mm-hmm. And if you're not mad about not having the truth and not wanting to have the truth, what you will do is you will jump. And if you think something is true, you will act on it and you will get mad. So without doing the heavy reasoning and getting the help to do the heavy, you'll jump to a conclusion and you'll start acting on that conclusion without any clear idea what you're doing. And you're mad and nobody can talk to you because you've already made your conclusion. And that's how all of us are. We don't really think through. We don't realize that Our actions are driven by our thought. If our thought's not careful, we'll do bad actions. And we'll be very convinced that we're right and we're doing this thing. There's a great saying, when good people think they're right, they can do anything. And what that means is you just think your own rightness proves it, and you bypass the mind. You bypass trying to get a proof to make sure you know what you're thinking, and we're doing that. And each person does that, and each person gets mad because the other person's doing evil, but we haven't decided what the evil is because we're not clear enough in what we're talking about.
Yeah. We have another question. Thomas?
Yes, Father.
Yeah, what's your question for Dr. Rizzi?
Yeah, I got a question for Dr. Rizzi. Dr. Rizzi, why do you think that St. John Paul II adhered to follow Thomism so deeply?
Okay, well, I think the answer is obvious. Every pope, pretty much every pope up to him, had recommended St. Thomas as the person to follow. Leo mm-hmm. XIII put St. Thomas back on the map because he had been lost because of the modern science not being digested properly. He put it back on the map, and St. John Paul wanted to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to say about that, the physics and the need to get people to understand the physics, to really properly understand Thomism that we said, but that's the simple answer why he was so committed to St. Thomas, and he was raised in that tradition.
Yeah, he started studying it in the post-war period, and you know, he certainly had been a victim both of Nazi propaganda and a false racist theory
yeah.
that was going to wipe all of Poland out, not only the Jews,
yeah, right.
they're going to wipe out all the Slavic yeah, peoples. Yeah. And then this was followed by a Marxist oppression.
Right.
And
so he had one and the other.
And he was going to be a professor of philosophy at a Catholic university in Poland. Mm-hmm. And he needed the truth.
He needed the truth, and he went to St. Thomas. Can we do her question?
Yeah, no, of course. We'll get there. Just pull
I really
reins
like
up
her
on
question.
That horse. Ma'am, where are you from?
I am from Fayetteville, Georgia.
Good to have you here. Welcome. And what is
Thank
your
you.
Question?
So earlier you mentioned, Doctor, that we shouldn't go to our neighbor, shouldn't go to our parish priest. Whom should we go to help us with that truth? Yeah. To help us with that understanding so we can then help others to bring them from error to truth?
Yeah, I really like that question a lot. Thank you for that question, because it really gets to the heart of what we need to do, you know? So we have to turn thought into action, otherwise it's dead. So the reason I say that is because you have to have somebody educated in the proper physics to answer these questions. If you're not educated in that, as much good of a guy as you might be, you're not going to be able to answer the question. You know, you're not going to go to your neighbor when you have, because he's a nice guy, or a parish priest because he's a nice guy and you like him, to do heart surgery, right? You're going to go to a specialist heart surgeon. And not that this is a specialty, but outside the Institute, people have not examined this and done this work. So you need to go to someone, either pick up the material or go start a book study with people, find somebody in the Institute that can work with you. And you know, if you can't do that, you can just pick up the book and start studying it with people, talking about it, and try to reach out with your questions to grow in understanding. You know, it's like you have to get the material where it's at. So you can't expect somebody who hasn't been exposed to it to have the answer. And it's a simple thing that you have to have the proper physics, and it has to be someone that knows the physics, that has understood it and said what it means. A non-physicist can't do that. Somebody who doesn't understand St. Thomas can't do that. And it's very rare to have both of those. You have to make a deliberate decision to do that, because when you learn modern physics, you instantly can understand St. Thomas. When I first started doing this,
Doing what?
When I first started trying to think about this kind of approach, how you do this stuff. So I tried to understand physics. Mm-hmm. Deeper than I was taught it. So I went and tried to read St. Thomas. I had no idea what he was talking about. I could tell he knew something I didn't know, but I had no idea what he was talking about, because my training made it so unintelligible, which is what all of you have. You all are trained at your own level in that modern science. And when you read St. Thomas, what's he talking about? What does that have to do? If you really look at it deeply, you can't follow it because you have the wrong physics and you don't have the modern physics. That he didn't have modern physics, so he made mistakes in the higher level science. And you're going to say, wait a second, that's not true. That didn't happen. if you read it carefully, and that's why he got neglected. And we have to bring him back. Both his main thing is his love for truth and his orderedness, his wanting to have things in an order, not just starting any place you want, but starting where your nature starts. Another question I asked that person was, why do you have a body? Why do you have a body? And I want everybody to ask themselves that. Why do you have a body? And he really couldn't answer. He did better than most, I have to say that. But he really didn't have the answer finally. The reason we have a body is because it's the only way we can know. The only way, everything we know comes through this body. Without this body, we know nothing. So that is showing how little we know about our own selves. We don't know, it's important to have a body, it's kind of nice, you can eat and drink, but that's not the point. Everything we do with our body is a way of knowing the world and through that to come to God. That's why we have sacraments. That's why Jesus became a man. None of that makes any sense unless you go back and start with the physical and see why we start with the physical, because our bodies, it's not an extra. And that explains, you know, why we don't know what the difference between a man and a woman is. A body is just a construct. We have this spiritual, I tell people, you know, because the common churchman will say the problem is materialism. And I want to say, as Father would say, thanks for playing, but wrong answer. The answer is we're over-spiritualized. We don't value our bodies. We don't know that we only know through our bodies. We think there's a beaming place. And that's the anti-nature attitude that's very obvious in that case, but it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. These two questions I could ask anybody, and almost no one would get them right, because they haven't thought at the base. They start where it's convenient to start, where your neighbor wants to start, not where you absolutely have to start. Like I say, is the common ground, the dirt.
And in the case of Helen Keller, her body had limitations.
Yes.
But her teacher was able to help her to use other aspects of
her senses, right?
And it was through her body that she learned.
Yeah, because it's very interesting because she would feel, right. She would smell. When somebody would come up to her, she would smell them. She would even taste them. And so it's through her body that she learned, and that's what her teacher did. But through that, she got to understanding. She didn't just stop at the body being trained. She went till she understood. And that's what we have to do with ourselves, because there's a higher self inside of you that we're not pulling out because we're afraid to do that task of actually disciplining ourselves like Miss Sullivan did with Helen.
We have another caller. We have Liam. You're calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Yes, sir.
And what can we do for you?
Dr. Rizzi said earlier in the broadcast, and he had said that friendship could be explained through physics, and I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little more on that, because it seems very vague.
So how can friendship be explained by physics?
Okay. Well, hello, Liam. I know Liam, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, physics can be, it's a whole long thing, but friendship, like anything else, comes through the physical. And so we have to understand, like I said before, everything we know comes through it, we know through the senses. So communications is partly bodily, and it's mostly bodily. I mean, I have to use my voice. I have to use, you know, I use my arms. I use other things to communicate. And friendship, to truly understand the goal of friendship, you have to understand what man is. And to understand what man is, you have to understand how he knows. And to do that, you have to understand his body. And to do that, you have to understand the physical world. And if you don't do that, you can't get a proper understanding of friendship. So in that article, I give for the first time a definition of love that's most specific that you can in our current context that nobody's done, because nobody's taken the physics seriously that we have now and given that very deep specification that you can when you understand the body. Because the body is the key to how we know. And it's through the body that we know about the deeper parts of the soul.
Mm-hmm. This is an important part. I mean, if your friendship starts because you want to play sports together, like a lot of boys,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of young girls, we play sports together, but that all entails your body.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the interaction is always going to be physical.
Right, right.
I think a lot of times people want to you know, when they hear that you communicate with your body, they oftentimes will think of that in a way that can move towards the body, you know, instead of just the body. But again, your body includes your eyes, the way you interact with somebody, the way you hit a ball in a baseball game, and all the other things.
Right.
There's that physical basic sense that
and your mind is operating all. If you just remember your childhood. There, and you look at a child, he's always constantly playing with stuff, throwing stuff up there, making noises, and that's all something he's absorbing through his physicality. Mm-hmm. And in the article, I also talk about, and Liam can read the article, that I talk about the physical expressions of friendship, like a handshake, like a hug.
Yeah.
And those things have meaning to them, which I explain in the thing, because of the nature of the body. Mm-hmm. And they have an intrinsic meaning that you should not violate because they don't, like, you know, punching somebody in the face. I can say, well, that's my way of saying you're a nice guy, but that's not what it means. I'm sorry.
Yes.
and so there's physical things that, and they have meanings in and of themselves. And it's like talking about, you know, the marital act is a physical act. And it means something in and of itself because of what it is, because physically what it is. And unless you really look deeply at what the meaning of things are, you miss those things, what their meaning is, because this is not just a bunch of skin cells. This is the instrument. For example, the hand is the instrument of the mind. This is the chief instrument of your mind. By using my hands, I can make stuff with my mind commands. This is the chief, that's why we shake hands. That's one of the things I bring out in there. That's why we shake hands, because it's saying, I'm gonna work together with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any weapons in my hand.
Yeah, that was the negative meaning. This is the positive. This is a new positive meaning.
But see, in that, there's both positive and negative elements that, you know, we can only know through the physical reality. And right. I think this is something that's very well worth considering. And when we consider even some basics of Catholicism, our Lord Jesus used physical things for the sacraments.
Yes.
He if he were evangelizing the angels,
He wouldn't.
He could have been purely intellectual, purely spiritual.
Right.
And a lot of people become afraid of that, but it's not to be afraid of.
Right.
I want to make sure that we get to encourage people to learn more about your work at the Institute for Advanced Physics. You can find out more about, you know, for instance, that chart that's from your website and that we showed earlier in the program, and to understand more of its meaning. How is that being used as a way to teach? You can go to the website, which is iapweb.org, iapweb.org, and that stands for the Institute of Advanced Physics. And that it's not that you're going to end up as a professional physicist, but you will understand what happens when you throw something. you'll understand more with your body.
And you'll understand everything about the world that you'd missed because you're starting from the beginning.
Right.
And so, but some of them will become professional physicists, but most of them won't.
No, I won't.
You won't. But I'll keep working on it.
Yeah. But thank you for being here, and thank all of you for being with us. May the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you and lead you in all of your ways by his peace. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
And we can bring Dr. Rizzi and all the other guests on this program and on the other programs as well, and all the specials we do, only because this network is brought to you by you. We don't do advertising and such, but we rather depend on our Lord working through you by keeping us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill. That enables us to pay all of our bills too. God bless you all, and thank you for your support.